Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Now you're welcome back. It is Wednesday at Rugby. Keith Wood, it's been a while. How are you doing?
I'm great, Joe. Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. It's great to have you with us. And we have alongside you, formerly of Dungannon, Ulster, London Irish, Castra, 32 caps for Ireland, British and Irish line twice in 97 and 01. Players, player of the tour in 97. Injury enforced retirement, unfortunately, before the age of 30, but now making his way in the coaching game in a big way. He's at Breve at the moment in the top 14. Jeremy Davidson, it's great to have you with us. Thanks for the time.
Hi there. Great to be on. Great to hear some dulcet tones from Ireland again.
Keith Wood, Jeremy Davidson, tell me about him, sum him up.
Well, he's looking particularly French at the moment, so that's what the first thing I'd have to say. Jeremy Davidson, I don't know when we first played together, but we, was that all the way back to 94 on the tour, yeah. Jeremy? We were on the tour in 94, and he was a good player, of course, and then he goes on a Lions tour in 97. And to be honest, he sets the world alight. And I thank my lucky stars. I probably owe him a pint every time I see him because he plucked every dead duck I threw at him on that whole tour, you know. And yeah, it's amazing. I was coming back from an injury and my throwing was never the best, but it was my confidence was fairly low going into that tour. And knowing that you had Jeremy in the middle, and there are a couple of truly outstanding catches that he caught one-handed that should have hit somebody else in the back of the head, but he plucked it out of the way. But that was only one part of it. That was the great part for me. But it was his ball carrying. I mean, Jeremy's a bit of a pain in the arse to play against. You know, he's big, strong, aggressive, and there's a lot of angles to him. And look, I thought on the back of that tour, he was the player's player on the tour, but I thought he was set for the best, you know, the best second row career you could possibly get. And for me, I think we're robbed of that fact because he got a bad knee injury. If I remember rightly, was that playing for Castra or was it playing for London Irish? And a really bad injury. And harshly, and he went on another Lions tour, but I don't know that he was ever quite the same after it. It was a bad, bad injury. And I think we were robbed of one of the greats, to be honest.
Right. Jeremy, I hadn't planned to start on that point necessarily, but the injury, we'll talk about the coaching career in France in due course. What was the nature of the injury? What age were you when it happened?
Well, firstly, it's great to see that Keith's mellowed in his old age. I've never heard him speak so nicely in the past. Very kind words indeed. Playing with Keith was always something that you enjoy. He was a great leader, a great captain. Somebody, every time he touched the ball, he made a difference. So he was somebody during my career that I looked up to. And, playing with him was fantastic, especially on that Lions tour, because he was kind of the, even though he was our age, he was kind of like the daddy of the Irish guys. So there was Eric Miller and Paul Wallace and myself. Unfortunately, Claude didn't make it. But Keith certainly showed the way forward. In terms of injuries, I was pretty unlucky with a knee injury, but I'm thankful for what I got out of my career. There's a lot of guys who finished a lot earlier in their careers and possibly had a lot more to give in the game. Different times, the game's evolved so much. I got my knee replacement there 3 weeks ago, and that's probably from being stubborn and continuing to play through years where I probably shouldn't have been playing. But we're very, very lucky to have played together and look back on some great memories.
So how did you get through the games, post knee injury when you shouldn't be playing? Is it painkillers? Is it bandaged up? Is it playing through incredible pain at 60, 70, 80% of what you could have been? Is that kind of how you survive for the extra few years?
Yeah, I'm not the only one. I think there's a lot of guys of that era who took painkillers before games and at halftime and were just ignorant, determined, and didn't let it get the best of them. You know, I suppose the last 3-4 years of my career, I was playing with a horrendous limp, but still just really, really happy to be part of the team and part of that game that you're so passionate about.
And were you able to put in decent performances?
Don't know if I'm the right person to ask. Yeah, I suppose if you're still in a professional rugby team, then you obviously merit your position. I think I probably should have retired a bit earlier. I would have liked to have performed better. I think any professional player wants to perform to the best of his ability. However, you know, those days are gone now, and thankfully players are well managed. The medical teams are a lot different. There's more emphasis on player welfare, and I think it's a very important part of the game.
And how did you injure the knee? In a game, presumably at some stage?
Well, it was just after the Lions tour. We were playing. I was playing for London Irish. It was a Sunday game on TV at King's Home, and played a decent second row. I think he was called Rob Fiddler. He put me under a lot of pressure in the air, and they took me out. They took my lifters out, and so I went from probably about 3 meters in the air down on one knee, and unfortunately, it ripped all the ligaments. I got up and tried to play on, and obviously couldn't. But that's just one of those things, you know. The game was different then, and you know, it's a contact sport. You've got to take the rough with the smooth.
They seem anyway like they were two of the great tours of the modern era. Really enjoyable. Obviously, the success in South Africa, and then, you know, I think, Keith, you often say 0-1 is still a bit of a regret because you had a great chance to win that tour as well. I know from speaking to Keith regularly, he really enjoyed them. How did you find that Lions experience, Jeremy? And even being given Players' Player of the Tour is quite something.
Well, it was incredible because I'd really only came onto the scene in 94 for Ireland on a tour to Australia. Only really got into the team at the end of 95. So I was still pretty much a fledgling in the Irish team. To go and play with people, I remember the first day meeting up in the hotel and seeing Jeremy Guscott and Jason Leonard and Scott Gibbs and people that I'd watched on TV on Saturdays during the Five Nations whenever I was in school. Childhood heroes. It was hard to take in, and then, you know, being capable of playing with those guys. And whenever you play with good players, they tend to up your standard and bring you on and develop you as a player. And I was very lucky in that respect that I was playing with players that were probably a lot better than I was. But at the end of the day, you know, having Ian McGeachan and Jim Telfer in charge of that Lions team, they knew how to get the best out of everyone. They knew how to create that melting pot between all the countries and make sure there was no cliques, make sure that the best players got there on merit. And, you know, I think that's why it was so successful.
Keith, you'd echo that, I suspect.
Yeah, I would. It was funny. I looked at it. I don't know whether this is right or wrong, Jeremy, but you were kind of like a protege of Willie Anderson from the same club. And I know he coached at different times through it. But I think it was a shock for a lot of the other players when they got an insight into the manner in which Jeremy trained. There was no difference from training to playing. And a lot of these guys were used to hard training and stuff, but I think yours, by dint of the performance and the training sessions, is what got you onto the team. I mean, there were other players, you were definitely not in line to be picked. There were a lot of other guys who had done some serious stuff before you, and would have been in line and would have thought that they could have. I don't think they thought it after the first three or four training sessions, where they got roughed up a little bit. And because we did as we always did. We kind of got stuck in. And it was funny. I go back to 2001 a little. It was like you were raging against the dying of the light. You were training incredibly hard. You were limping. You were playing pretty well, but not able to get to the heights that you had before. And the only element that I would say in terms of that, I'm sad for that, and that's fine kind of looking back at it, but I do think there's a high level of pride that I'd still have for how you reacted to a bad injury. Was, okay, you fought, and then you stopped, and you think you should have retired earlier. Maybe that's true, actually. But you then grunted every single bit. All the stuff that had got you on the rugby field got you onto the coaching field as well, because you weren't... you weren't shy about going through all the hard yards and that. And by going to France, I think you put yourself under huge pressure to deliver when it's very, very awkward. And yet you're still at it. I mean, you're nearly French at this stage.
Not quite.
How quickly, I mean, you're very philosophical there, the way you said the game owes me nothing and lots of players have shorter careers than you did. How quickly, as a young man about to turn 30, with, you know, admittedly two Lions tours and 32 caps in your Ireland, but still the sense it could have been better. How quickly did you park the disappointment and manage to say, okay, you know, take that philosophical approach that you have now? Was it pretty easy to do, or a couple of years of anguish maybe?
It wasn't always a level kind of playing field. There were days where you thought, I'm going to go to the gym and I'm going to train and I'm going to start playing again, which was completely ridiculous. Whenever I coached at Dungannon, the chairman of rugby, I told him every year for 4 years to keep me on the playing roster just in case we're in a relegation battle and had to do something, which was completely ridiculous as well, because I could barely walk, never mind run. But you know, you always keep a small memory of the past and wanting to get out in that field, because there's no substitute for the changing room, for the build up for games, for training, for the preparation, for, you know, coaching substitute the best you can get. I'm still involved with my passion in life, and I thank myself every day. I pinch myself every day I get up. But it was a hard moment to pass, and now more and more you see that players are suffering from mental health issues and the end of their career, because they possibly haven't had the guidance that they needed to get their career sorted. I was very, very lucky in that Dungannon came to my bed in Belfast when I was struggling with my knee and my back after the end of my career, and basically demanded that I start coaching. I didn't want to coach rugby. I wanted to get away and do something different. I wanted my life, my family, not to be slaves to a rugby club. You know, every three nights a week and at weekends at the rugby club all day. I wanted to do something different, and after my first training session at Dungannon, that all changed, because I went out on the pitch and I didn't see the, back in that day it was quite long, I didn't see the 2 hours pass, and it was really enjoyable. So I was kind of lucky from my transition from professional sport into coaching.
Nice, that's fascinating. So kind of a 180 in the space of one training session.
Absolutely. I'd hoped to go into some type of business. I'd done European business studies at university. I'd done French at university. I'd played in France. And after 4 years of coaching at Dungannon and loving every moment of it, I got a phone call out of nowhere from Pierre-Yves Rival, the president of Castres. And I got a leg up into the professional game. which, you know, a lot of credible people who know the game inside out don't necessarily get that chance. So you've got to make your own luck, but you've got to have a good bit of luck as well.
Well, he obviously saw something in you. And for people vaguely au fait with how you're going in France, I'll sum this up. You can fill in the details then. But you spent 8 years with Aurillac in the French second division, and by all accounts did a very good job there and held things together there. And budgets aren't what you would like, I'm sure, at that level. And then you got your chance with Brive, and in your first year you got Brive up into the top 14, promotion to the top 14. And we are in the midst of your second season, and obviously events have intervened, but things seem to have gone quite well. You're 10th in the table, clear-ish of relegation, within touching distance maybe of the playoffs. I'm sure it's a year of trying to stabilise things. But from the outset, that looks like things are going very well. I see you've signed a contract to stay at Brive now till 2023. So I think I've given you the Wikipedia version. You can give us the lived reality of all that.
Well, after coaching at Castres for 2 years, I got a chance to go home and coach the fours at Ulster, which I obviously relished, being an Ulster man and having played for Ulster. Thereafter, I went to Aurillac for 6 years. And we had the smallest budget in the league at that stage. So I kind of got a good link with Clermont-Ferrand and brought through a lot of their academy players. My kind of philosophy at that stage was that, you know, if we didn't have the money to buy the big, powerful players in France, we had to, you know, change tact and bring them through and let the youth of tomorrow play week in, week out and make them better players and develop our own, which was kind of a model that worked well for us at Aurillac. We got to two semi-finals and a final of the Pro League, unfortunately missing out in promotion. But we, at that stage, we had the smallest budget every year out of 16 clubs. So that was reasonably successful and a very, very enjoyable time. It was very fulfilling to be able to give young kids that came out of academies age 22 and give them a wee bit of light at the end of the tunnel to play professional rugby and have a career. Thereafter, I moved to Bordeaux for a year, which was enjoyable, but it was difficult because I was working with a guy called Rory Teague, who has just recently been sacked by Gloucester. So I decided to jump ship and move to Brive. They unfortunately had been relegated, so I was given the job to get them back up. And through hard work and bringing through young kids, we got back up in the top 14. We beat a lot of teams last year, a lot of the big teams like Bordeaux, Lyon, Toulouse, etc. at home, and stayed up. So this year, after 2 years, our average age has gone from over 30 to 25. We're building towards the future. We know our place in French rugby is a club that's going to bring through young kids and talent, and we're not going to be able to keep all of the young kids that we bring through. There's nothing more fulfilling than adding value to players and giving them a right start in professional rugby. French rugby is based a lot on values, you know, honesty, determination, pride, solidarity. So Brive, thankfully, have a huge part in French history. They won the European Cup back in 1997. And they have a huge place in French rugby. You know, for example, there's 47,000 people in the greater community of Brive, and every home game we have an average crowd of 10,500. So it just kind of shows the kind of vocal support that we get week in, week out.
Joe, I was just going to say, we went down with Off the Ball to Brive to a Munster game a few years ago.
It was amazing because all the local suppliers, food suppliers, were waiting for us in the airport. So we almost had a festival before we actually got in there. And it's the most incredible market. I played against that Brieve team in 97 in the quarterfinals for Harlequins. We got beaten down in Brieve, quarters or semis. VR and Cara were unbelievable wingers that they did incredibly well. They were a really cracking team. They fell off the face of the earth there for an awful long time. But for you, Jeremy, does it bringing the young kids through, does that really bring your level of coaching up an awful lot higher? Do you think you're improving hugely as a coach because you can't rely on huge forwards to carry it over to, or big Galacticos to win the matches for you? Do you feel that you're a coach's coach in many respects?
I think it brings it all back to basics and you know what rugby is all about. Rugby's not about, even though Toulon proved that with a star-studded team, they could win the European Cup 3 years in a row. But, you know, having a big checkbook is not everything. Having team spirit, having guys that want to work for each other, building a good culture within a club, guys developing people from the region who want to play for the club and want to stay here, having a fanatical fan base, even though you know we go up against Racing and Clermont, who have 4 or 5 times our budget. That's kind of what rugby's about, and I'm glad that we've kept those values, and I'm glad that that's where we're about. In terms of coaching, it's a lot more fulfilling to bring through young kids, see them develop. Playing maybe 5-6 games in top 14 next year, and then being a starter the year after, it's far more fulfilling as a coach. But I think the most important thing for me is to be a student of the game. Once we think, you know, I think I've seen coaches in the past. Once you think you know it all, you know, it's game over. You've got to keep developing and evolving. Be a student of the game. Be open-minded, want to share ideas, always look for people to discuss how you want to attack, how you want to defend, how the game's evolving. Go look in New Zealand what they're doing over there, or South Africa or Australia. I think it's really, really important that coaches have an open mindset now. You know, in the past, rugby was far more directive. Coaches told you what you had to do on the field, and we went and did it. We didn't ask questions, and now there's a far bigger emphasis on pulling the answers out of the players rather than pushing. So we ask more questions. We try and get more leadership groups. We try and improve our tactical awareness, our strategic awareness, and how we do everything, because you know. Friday night lights, whenever the lights go on, we don't really have anything to say. It's the players that have to really put what we've trained all week into practice.
You're obviously a Francophile as well and like the lifestyle over there. And for people just listening who can't see you, Keith and I can see you. You're outside and yet there's no hint of wind on the microphone. So it looks like a beautiful, still French evening. There's a yellow kind of sun hitting you. We're drenched in rain for what feels like the last 5 years, even though it's about 3 weeks. Tell us a bit more about Brieve and life in Brieve.
Brieve is a wonderful town. It's got a beautiful central area, which is all pedestrian, which in the summertime is fantastic. It's full of supporters. And as Keith said, there's a wonderful food market here. In the center of town, which specializes in wine and foie gras, duck breasts, anything to do with duck, and mushrooms and truffles. Wonderful restaurants. Brieve has been called the Little Bordeaux in the past because there's a really big tradition of good restaurants and good bars and eating out and people kind of have a bit of a decadent lifestyle. a rugby coach, you don't, because we've got long hours in the office, and most of my time is spent at home if I'm not at work. But it's a wonderful place to live. It's in a bit of a cauldron. So in the summer, it gets very, very, very hot. In the winter time, you know, you never get any snow. So it's a wonderful climate. It's great, you know, every day, no matter where you are, you know why you get up in the morning and why you work hard, because everybody's so passionate about the game. You know, you'll meet a granny in her slippers if you're at the petrol station or the bakery, and she'll give you a rundown on the game from last week or the latest recruitment. So it really is humbling to live and breathe and be in contact with such fantastic supporters.
Well, that sounds amazing, which makes my next question maybe seem a little silly. That does sound amazing. What about inklings to come and work at provincial level at home? Or, you know, you're building quite the CV. Have the IRFU been in touch and said, let's keep in touch, Jeremy, let's keep talking, anything like that?
I think it's very, very important in life to be successful away from home before really getting a chance back at home. You know, sometimes people are too quick to jump at jobs, and they're maybe not right. They maybe don't have the experience or the ability to take a step back and analyze the situations properly. I'm very, very keen to stay in France as long as possible. Keep our learning. I'm loving my job in Brive at the minute. I've signed till 2023. I've got an awful lot to learn about the game still, and I'm keen to do that. Unfortunately, lockdown stopped me from going back to New Zealand this summer. I've had a lot of Zoom calls and different analysis group meetings and stuff to keep thinking about the game and keep seeing where we want to go. We've developed our infrastructures here with a new training center, a hybrid pitch and a synthetic pitch. So everything we're doing is aimed towards playing with more pace and moving the ball more towards the future. You know, I really want to get back to Brive, the French Flair days where we're going to, you know, play at a higher intensity than everybody that we come against. And we can do that with the young crop of players that we're bringing through. So, you know, to answer your question, I'd love to come home eventually, but I've still got a lot of work to do here.
Wow. Well, Keith, that's quite the career from a muddy pitch in Dungannon with no interest in coaching.
It really is. It's incredibly refreshing. I think every time we think of French rugby over the last 10 or 15 years, we think of these huge power plays from the forwards and goal kicking 9 or 10 who make certain that they get the points, all that sort of stuff. And I don't know that we see it quite as much as the French flair. And to have an Irishman wanting to bring French flair back is kind of interesting as well. But I think it's refreshing that he's looking to bring, to give youth its head, give youth its chance, that you're not looking for big name signings. I don't know whether that's a possibility or whether you do look for them or not, but with the makeup of your team, which is predominantly French, is that correct?
Yeah, we've got quite a big nugget of Georgians and Fijians. Just basically because we did a bit of homework on the people that were in the market, and those were the best characters, the best guys off the field as well as on the field for what we needed. But we've a huge amount of emphasis put on our academy, bringing through local kids so that you know, they'll fly the black and white of Brive high in the future.
Jerry, where do those kids come from in the academy? Are they coming through rugby schools or are they coming through local clubs?
The French system has a federation academy. It's for female and male rugby players from early ages to 12 up, whilst they're at school. We have one of those based in Breve, which kind of helps us a wee bit, get some local talent in. We have a lot of talent scouts.
I think we've lost you. You gone, Jeremy? I think he's gone. Keith, I was actually going to wrap up the chat anyway at the end of this answer because we're out of time. We'll have to catch up with Jeremy again, I think. He's building a pretty interesting career and doing it his own way. That was really interesting.
Well, really interesting. And I actually think you'd find a lot of Irish supporters would look at that with a little bit of envy and say, you know, some of the criticism is that when we're under pressure, we immediately go overseas for a big name signing. He may not have the checkbook to be able to go and do that, but it also seems to be his philosophy that he'll get a few guys that are good and will fit in and will do a really good job while building up the youth around him. So I think he has done very well. Like Breve is a cracking little city. It's very proud of its pedigree and its history, and it has been in the doldrums for a period of time. So getting back at the top table has been pretty good. I think he's carved an incredible career so far.
It feels a bit silly, frankly, to thank him when he's not here, but our thanks to Jeremy Davidson nonetheless for giving us his time. We'll check back in with him maybe when things get back up and running in France. And Keith, my thanks to you. I think you've just done another State of the Union, so that's probably out tomorrow, I would presume. I'm told this is like a reflection on all the things that you've been talking about over the last few months.
It is. We didn't try and put too much of our own opinion into it. We were trying to get information from other people, different perspectives. So, yeah, myself and Ger have had a little bit of a rant. It's been it's been interesting kind of talking through it, but a lot of things have happened and nothing has happened in the last period of time. So, we're kind of throwing a few things up into the air to see where we go. But, it's been a very interesting journey with it because, you know, when lockdown happens, you're wondering exactly what you should do or don't do. But to delve into the sport has been very interesting. I think we've all learned an awful lot more than we did before the start of it.
Yeah, well, they're all waiting for people still on the new OTB Sports app, which is waiting for you to download it, and other places as well. Keith, cheers for that. Much appreciated. We'll talk again.
Pleasure. Cheers, Joe.
Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.